generally speaking, the rate would normally work if you do an overseas trip. It would be, if we took faculty, consider it would be 3 ANC, 1 DA, and 1 EFF in terms of the size of the committees. But if we want to stop and change it, I think we can stop and change it if we want to. But I think that is the stance. So if we deviate from that, people would have the right to complain. But if amongst ourselves we feel otherwise, I don't think that there would be too much of a change, unless we could all talk to the products of this world. So at some point we're going to have to indicate to the secretary who exactly those members are, so that they can start the process of getting the funding and the permissions for us not to be here during those days. So I don't want to open up to discussion. I really don't want to open up to discussion. We've got leaders of political parties. We'll ask those two assignments to decide which three ANC people will go in their own way, and we'll do the same with the parties. But if Mr. Lebron can get that by close of business today, so that he can then start the process. I'm really not fussy about who goes and who doesn't go. As long as we try and have representativity as far as is possible. So Mr. Buzani, some of us are a bit more flexible because we long in the tooth. We can find other ways of getting there. But I'd rather have everybody go there, because it's really important. Right? The new parliament, you've not been exposed to it, and it really would be useful. Not just from this committee's perspective, but from the perspective of oversight generally. And AG and his team, I might indicate, are really annoyed. When we started this committee, we couldn't do it without funding and support in kind from the AG's office. They, I think, as things stand, are the secretariat for APEC, the major funder of APEC, and a major role player for APEC in terms of the materials it provided. So I think we, as the oversight committee directly responsible for the AG, should be there. I think we should be there. So if we could, by end of business today, agree who should represent us as a committee, and let us reiterate, we go there as a committee and not as a political party. We go there, we go here as a committee, and we defend our decisions as a committee, if ever we need to defend them. And that's how we operate, even when we go over time. We go and represent this parliament. In this case, we're going to represent this committee in the engagement at Sun City from the 22nd to the 25th of December. I'm not sure, Mr. Lebron, if you've given them this. There is a draft program, I think, that I've seen. I'm hoping members have received the draft program. So it gives an indication, and also a question of where do you want to move from, and where do you want to be dropped off after conference and so on. You could give all that information for logistic purposes, we'll sort that out. That deals with that. If we then get on to the main business of the day, we've indicated why we're here and what authority is here. We really want the AG, and I did have a meeting with the AG's office, I think earlier this week, and on your behalf, says to the AG, we might all be seasoned politicians, but really many members are fresh and new in terms of really what the AG is about and our own role. So we've asked the AG to tell us, who's he, what does he do, why does he do what he does, and how does he see the next at least 12 months heading out, and of course the next 5 years going forward. So AG would give us that type of input. I've also asked the AG to limit it in your absence, Mr. McQuist, to at least 2 hours, so that members can engage if they need to engage. We want to be out of here by about 12:45, because I know many people want to test flat. But if we can do it in 15 minutes, I have no problem. But we've asked the AG to give us his input as comprehensively as possible, AG, because we are seasoned politicians, but this is new to many of us. So if you give that to us, we'll allow you and your team to take us through whatever it is you want to take us through, including your proposed programs in terms of way forward. Ultimately, the committee will take a decision whether that suits them, and we'll then negotiate on your availability, the committee's availability, and also the pressing issues that might arise. that from time to time. Is that acceptable as a way forward?
Yes.
That is acceptable. Thank you very much. If that is the case, Oye, we'll hand over to you and your team immediately. And it is 9:30, round about 11:30, 11:45. We will then ask you to, if you've reached the end, to then conclude, and we will then open up to members to ask any question. There's no question or input that is going to be suppressed because it's our first meeting. It's really going to be an open season. Going forward, we might guide it more strictly, but for today, it's really an open house, question, answer, getting to understand, and developing a program going forward at least until the end of this financial year. And beyond, if it's possible. So, AG, to you and your team, thank you for coming once again, and you're very welcome. These are the people that are going to be interacting with in terms of parliamentary oversight. I just forgot one thing. I also met with the chair of the audit committee. We didn't deem it necessary for the audit committee to be here, but it's also another stakeholder that is. Members felt at some point, and I think if memory serves me correctly, they'll be here with the threat land or with the annual reporting. So we will meet them shortly. But we said to them it was not necessary for them to be here today. And finally, just also to apologize to members, because I do know that some of you are becoming anxious about either such a committee or just a paper committee. We really struggled to get a date where the AG was available, because not the first meeting the AG himself must be available. We could have met much earlier, but it would have been the absence of the AG. I don't think that would have been proper. So I want to apologize on behalf of this table that was not, because we didn't think it was important, but we really wanted to get the entire team for the first meeting, and going forward, I'm sure the AG is going to delegate, will do that, but this meeting we got here, and his entire leadership should be here. So I apologize to members that it took us so long to have this meeting. Having said that, AG, over to you and your team.
Thank you very much, Chair. Greetings to the members of the committee. And indeed, we are very grateful, Chair, that at least you have managed to accommodate us so that we can get going in this time of Parliament. I almost felt like when you were introducing the subject, Chair, I almost felt like it was a case of on your mark, get set, so I was almost ready for the gong. And it's in that context that we have been quite anxious to engage with the Council. To start today, Chair, I'd also like to underline the point that you made earlier regarding the work of the Association of Public Accounts Committees. Fortunately, if I recall, I think the SACOPEC, which is the SADC region body of public accounts committees, was concluding its event this week, I think yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. And yes, SACOPEC is another development which is about trying to take issues of governance and oversight and public institutions to the continent. It's already an established body, and we are working closely as well with them. As I begin my input, Chair, I also would like to thank the members of the relative team, also of the Auditor General, for having made sure that as we are going through the transition, they've all geared up to make sure that we do not veer off the track, because we know that we have been left a huge responsibility for us to take to the next level if one looks at the successes as well as the efforts that were put by the previous Auditor General and those that came before him. So I think it is thanks to what they have done in stabilizing the ship and making sure that we can continue to contribute what we are required to contribute as an institution in terms of the issues of governance and administration in the public sector. So my understanding, again, Chair, as you have indicated for purposes of today's intervention, is that we will be taking you through the mandate, the role and functions of the Auditor General of South Africa. We will also be sharing with you the current strategic plan, which is at its tail end now, because it was designed to come to an end at the end of the term that has just finished. It's just that the term of former Auditor General, November, ended in November, when we were midway, just about a year to go before we concluded a lot of the things that were undertaken to the strategic goals of the organization over the last 7 years when I was in office. So we are at the salient part, and we will be sharing with you what we are currently focusing on as an institution. And of course, the working relationship between ourselves as an audit office, together with the standing committee on the Auditor General, as articulated in statutes. We'll also be taking you through that, as well as any issue that we have identified from our side as an office which we think require immediate attention. Some of them are practical requirements, but some of them are matters of normal oversight that we normally engage with the committee on. So those are four issues that are picked up in the correspondence that we received from the committee, and we'll be taking you through that. And of course, as the chair has indicated in my presentation, I'll also be talking about the upcoming events like the report on our annual performance, which is our annual report, which was tabled last week on Thursday, and it's already on the table. And I think we'll also be talking about that part of the invitation in due course. The budget plan that will commence from next year is also a subject that will be coming back to the committee on, hopefully, before the end of this year. But those are the key things that I think we need to just keep an eye on as we go through the presentation, because this will be what requires those sessions that the chair was talking about in respect of the time and the effort that needs to go into making available a Wednesday, if that's the case, to go through some of those issues and the level of teaching required from an oversight point of view. So that's my way of introduction, Chair. And I guess in starting out on the journey that we are on as an office, we are largely informed in the work that we do by that reputation promise, which is directly drawn from what the intentions of the Constitution and the law were in respect of the work that we need to do. And we have translated that mandate for ourselves to say that we exist as an audit office to enable oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector, auditing, thereby building public confidence. And in essence, what we are looking at here is that when we examine the books that we audit in government, we want to come to a conclusion that says that indeed the people who, on whose behalf these resources are being handled, who have a level of confidence arising from the disciplines that we contribute to developing and enhancing the public sector. As I said earlier on, the positioning of Grace engagement is ready to interact with the committee, and I'm hoping, Chair, that it's not going to take any longer than an hour and a few minutes, because I'm sure there will be more value in allowing more time to engage than for me to speak for 2 hours, which I settle to do most of the time. So I can already thank 45 minutes, Chair, from your expectation, which is a good start. Those are the four issues that we wanted to talk to. As I said earlier on, Chair, the mandate of the office is obviously established in terms of Chapter 9 of the Constitution. And it recognizes also that the office independence must be guaranteed in the Constitution, that the office must be independent in the execution of functions, and that the Auditor General and its office must be impartial in the exercise of its power without fear, favor, or prejudice. This is very fundamental in the sense that we do the work that we do, which in most instances may have an impact in a number of cases, and therefore it's important that we remain a credible source of insight for those people who will rely on the insights and the work that we produce, particularly when it comes to strengthening the area of governance and accountability. Going forward from that general issue on the importance of independence, it's a specific part of our mandate which says that we must, at the end of every year, which in government as we know it is the end of March, and also for local government being the end of June, we must audit, and it's important to underline the must because it actually is a very same mandate that we must audit and report on the accounts and financial statements and management of government institutions, starting from national departments and entities, provinces, as well as the local sphere of government. So that's where we draw our mandate from. which data gets completed in the public audit act in 2004 of the act, which specifically differentiates the type of issues that we as an audit office are empowered to do. In 35 of the public audit act, it regulates our functions in terms of how we need to perform our mandate, as well as in the section 20 of the public audit act, it also specifically states that these are the three areas that we focus on in the work that we do. I just want to stay on a little bit on this one, because this is pretty much what we normally take to the public domain. When we audit the financial statements that we audit every year, the key primary areas that we focus on are the financial statements, which are the ones on which we put our opinion. That's the third part. The second part that we look at in addition to that is to also look at matters that are in respect of compliance with laws and regulations that govern financial management. It's an important part of the work that we reflect on. And the third part is to assess the transparency and credibility with which the objectives that have been set have been reported in the annual report. So those are the three elements that we evaluate. And if I go back to the first bullet, which is about examining financial statements, that is the work that all of our staff across the country in all the 9 provinces, and I did go through, I'll probably bring in some of the staff that's on the later slides, but we currently have in the office about 3,200 odd people, the majority of whom are auditors whose job is to examine financial statements and to through the process that we have in the office, report on the outcomes of the examination of the financial statements of all national, provincial, and local government institutions. And when we conclude the process with all those people, with all the checks and balances that we have developed in the delivery process right up to Auditor General, we produce these financial statements and we put our report to them. Now, we often talk in the public domain about something referred to as a clean audit. That word clean audit came from these three components in essence, because these are three components that we're examining. It's not a standard related type of naming discipline, in that you will not find it in any standards. But if anything, it's talking about the three key issues on which we report. So it's always important to have that at the back of our mind, because this is what the section 20 of the public audit act requires us to put on. Are these financial statements a fair representation of the activities of the institution on which we report? Have they complied with all laws and regulations that govern the work that they ought to be doing insofar as financial management is concerned? Things like supply chain management, things like keeping an accurate set of records at all times so that they can be able to stand to scrutiny when those financial statements are examined. So behind all of this, when we look at it after the report, we then do fair work behind the scenes to analyze the root causes that give rise to the deficiencies that we have in any of those three areas. And that's what finds its way into what we call our general report. Because our general report is now a deeper analysis and a deeper interpretation of what are the main root causes that give rise to the deficiencies that we pick up at the stage when we report on the financial statements. So I'm trying to give this speech in terms of the journey that we go through. Members will also have an appreciation of the magnitude of the resources that go into it in respect of our annual plans, in respect of our strategic plan and so on. Because this is where the bulk of it is. It's not at the point where you issue the financial statements and then you all walk away. But there's a level of work that goes into it, which is what triggers the debate about clean audits in the public domain and so on and so forth. It's that engine which is in Section 20, which is effectively our license to operate. And that's what we take to the public domain in terms of the audit outcomes and the general report. And these general reports are two of them. One is focused on the area that is governed largely by the DFMA, and then the other one is a general report, which is the one that was released recently at the end of July, which is regulated by the Municipal Finance Management Act, which is the audit of local government. So every year when we report annually and requires to report in Parliament, we'll be bringing those two instruments to Parliament to reflect provisionally across the board, across all municipalities, as well as across all national and provincial entities. So that's the whole of the mandate, Chair, in terms of the specific work that we do. Our original work, as I said, we are in all of the 9 provinces across the country, spread out among all those 3,200 people. As you can see, there's nowhere we don't exist as far as the 9 provinces are concerned. That's specifically designed to deal with the logistics so that we can go to all the institutions to be able to do the audit work. So we have people on average, I think in each of the provinces, if I take averages, it will probably be no less than 100 in any of the offices. But the bulk of our people are at the head office in Pretoria, probably somewhere around 700 or so, with all of the support functions and all of that. But we have a national footprint as an audit office. We used to have a little drop at the top there, just beyond Limpopo, which was a little dot called New York, you know, and it still has an existence in the United Nations. But we disappeared once our mandate was finished there. But every one of our resources are in the country. This is the profile in terms of our staff mix in the office, as I said, just around 3,200 odd employees of different disciplines. What we share the slide is really the mix. I mean, you'll see that we've got 460 chartered accountants, which I think is quite a major achievement over the years, Chair, if I may, because over the last 15 to 20 years, these types of qualifications were either in single or double digits. So this is a major improvement in terms of having managed to hold onto these type of skills. And the mix of them, for example, we'll have the CISA day is a qualification that is held by people who are trained in information and communication technology audits. They are the technical experts who audit information technology environment. The ARCA is your British based and broadly in the continent. It exists. Our qualification, there's quite a number of the people that we have in that. The registered government auditors, about 300 odd people. These are people that are trained and are accredited by specifically an institute that does training for registered government auditors, so that the people that are trained in the private sector have a good balance and a good mix given them, and those that have worked in the public sector training. We are pretty young organization, if you look at it, because our source of talent largely is coming from universities and has been for many years where we recruit people who have studied commerce and all of that. But I think we are lucky that we have this profile among others, because a lot of the people that worked in the audit office many years ago were seasoned civil servants. It was probably, if you look at 20, 30, 40 years or so ago, it would have been people that were assistant civil servants. They went in there because they came through the civil service. But here we are recruiting largely from the student base for our talent, which is why you find that you have that average youthfulness, which I think is an opportunity because it's a training ground anyway for not only ourselves, but also for the public sector and other institutions that create them. We know that they are good, and they are looked after, and there are many people who are looking to recruit them, and if they go into the rest of the public sector, at least we are also able to manage to retain many of them. Because of this profile, it also requires a lot of mentoring, I guess, because they are saying if you've got 68% generation Y in the composition of your people, there's a lot of mentoring and ongoing development. Because of the nature of the work that we do, which sometimes calls on people's judgment, and I guess judgment also, can sometimes to be much tighter if it is exercised with a little bit of experience. So that is our journey, and that's one of the things we're going to be sharing with the committee in respect of where we want to put our resources. Because the mandate still says the Auditor General must audit, and therefore there must be people who are going to examine those records. So that's a profile, Chair, but we still have a good number also of very experienced staff, as you would know from our provinces and our municipal office. We often rely on a lot of experience as well. That slide is probably not too clear on the board, but maybe might be clear on the page. If I just direct your attention to it, just our overall piece, the way we are defined, all of those many colors there are just an indication of one of the factors we have in place. But I just deal with one or two, as I've introduced myself earlier, Auditor General right there at the top, and followed by the Deputy Auditor General, Bakani Rafaela. And we've got two levels below the Deputy Auditor General, which I think is probably where I leave this whole discussion, because I think it becomes more important when we start talking about the annual report as well as the service plan. But we have together with us here today Eugene Zungu, who is our national leader audit services. He's next to Farhani. He's responsible nationally across the board for all the different combination of portfolios which are themselves led by some other senior executives in terms of the way that we define the split work and the oversight over the work, as well as how our work flows from wherever in the countryside right up to when it finds its way into the media, as an example. That's the kind of operation that we oversee there. And then on the other side, there's a number of support areas that we have developed over time to enhance our ongoing ability to deliver on our mandate. And that's what the National Leader Internal Operations and Audit Support, where the support functions that support directly the audit effort, will also provide, including the performance audit area and other disciplines that are not core to the delivery of the statutory audit, but are integral in terms of how they work together, like your information systems audit, others listed on the other side. So that's really the sum in total of all of the people that I mentioned who are the original group of 3,200. The area that we deal with on an ongoing basis, like I said earlier on, the mandatory work which is articulated in the Protocol of Care in Section 20, is the regularity work, the regularity audit, which is the examination of financial statements on an annual basis for all 3 years, effectively. And we assess the reports on those three elements, which are financial compliance and predetermined objectives. And the second area that we are also responsible for doing performance audits, where we do an examination much deeper than what a regularity audit does, but this one is largely focusing on issues of economy with which the government programs and projects have been delivered. It also examines the issues of effectiveness of the implementation of those programs and the efficiency with which the mix of the inputs has been done in order to produce a cost-effective product. So that's the area of work. If the members will recall last year when we did an examination of the audit of the use of consultants in government, that was a performance audit, because that performance audit was not about whether you debited the right account or whether you credited another account as what a regularity audit would be wanting to examine. This one was to look at, to what extent do you have the rigor that is required in order to ensure that you get the best value for money when you use the external service providers? And the tools that we use there were to look a lot deeper, to start looking at things like, since you paid that particular service provider, have you bought that which you bought in use or not? In which case it means that the effectiveness of that expenditure has not been realized because all the resources have been paid, but the final product that ought to have been delivered has either not been delivered or has not been put into use. So that is the angle that the second audit takes, and we will be rolling out our program in this area because we believe that there's a lot more value that can also be delivered in looking at a lot more different qualitative elements when we comment on the accountability cycle. The investigations area, we've kind of positioned our investigations area to the one that is reactive, as it were. We respond to the request for people who want us to perform certain investigations. We normally put a very strong oversight element into the acceptance process of these investigations, because they often are the type of things that require much broader skills than we have geared up for, because investigations are difficult to staff people around them with all necessary resources if they are not ready or commanded, because it's a question of someone wants an investigation in September and then it's quiet for the rest of the year until in April next year when somebody else asks for it. So in the meantime, you could be picking up the tape in terms of having those full-time people, but they're not really well for them. So the way we use them currently, people that are in our investigations part of the office, it's not a big number, but what we do is we get them to focus largely on issues like providing insight to the regularity auditors on how to sharpen audit procedures that will help in detecting prevalence of fraud when we audit credit statements, which is pretty much a valuable resource because an ordinary auditor sometimes will not have a deeper line of sight into certain things that are indicators of potential fraud, particularly when it comes to document examination. So a lot of them use them in that context, but we do respond to certain investigations when they are required for us to for example, follow supply chain management deviations and all of those things. And then obviously if there are any specific upgrade upon processes, we will also be available to consider them. It could be about tracking the delivery of a particular project, for example, and you are requested to do that, but you don't often get those things because those things, we can see that they do exist elsewhere. And so they also go back to the one on the investigations chair. Over the last couple of years, if you look at the environment we're operating in, there's been a significant growth in the capacity of the likes of the SIU, particularly with the normal proclamations that you get, where they have built up their resources over time. So they end up now at least one of those agencies that are able to respond timely to any requests for investigations, including other capacities in other sub-panel institutions. Like I said in the beginning, the key issues around our financial statements audit is that the audit standards to which we audit, they require us to form an opinion on whether the financial statements are reliable, and everything that we do in terms of those financial statements is geared towards achieving that objective. And the specific financial reporting framework that is developed and monitored by National Treasury, to which all publicly funded institutions are required to report, and it is that reporting framework against which we examine the financial statements. So that if there are any difficulties in understanding our interpretation of the issues that are reflected in financial statements, at least we know there's a custodian at the highest level in the public sector, which is National Treasury, that is responsible for the financial reporting framework that governs and regulates how financial statements ought to be framed and reported on. The second issue, which I also dealt with here on Chair, is the issues around these financial statements that we are reporting on. If they were just a set of numbers, as they are reflected in the balance sheet as well as in the statement of comprehensive income, what sort of meaning could be attached to them if they were just only numbers? And therefore, it becomes important to then look at these numbers in relation to the things that these funds were committed to achieve, which is what the predetermined objectives issues is. Because that is information that goes in the annual report that says, with all that you see on the balance sheet as well as on the income statement, we were aiming to achieve all of these things which were set in the strategic plan at the beginning, and this is what we are reporting against. So our responsibility then, in order to make sure that there's proper governance and there's proper assurance given on the financial statements which are reported publicly, is also to make a conclusion on whether the service delivery reporting has been made in a manner that is reliable, in the sense that there's a source document from which that information, which is in the annual report, is coming from. And that it has been the same information that you are reporting against is the same as that which you said you will be doing. For example, if you're reporting on 25,000 houses to be delivered, we don't want to see your actual reporting being bricks instead of being houses. So then it's not consistent with what you said you're going to do. Those are the kind of issues that examine to make sure that when an editor reports against what they said they will achieve, what we trace back in terms of those documents that substantiate it does it is reflect houses instead of something else. And again, I spent a bit of time in respect of the compliance with laws and regulations. And largely the issues here change those matters which are specific to financial management environment, the likes of supply chain management, as well as issues around whether creditors and suppliers are paid as regulated within the prescribed periods, for example, and all manner of other things which have to do with ultimately unauthorized, irregular, and fraudulent and wasteful expenditure. They come into that bracket, so that's the kind of issues that we're having. And the completeness of all of those comes in the form of five different types of audit opinion that we normally arrive at once we examine those areas. The third one, which is normally a clean bill of health, will be what we commonly call the clean audits. Whenever an institution claims to have achieved clean audit from us, they are referring to have passed the test in all material respects. I think it's important to underline, because there may be things that the audit would not have given full attention to if they were not material. So it is to the extent that these issues are material in the context of the particular institution. Material in the sense of importance, in the sense of the value attached to them in relation to other things, and so on. So there's a level of judgment, that's where I'm going with this, Chair. There's a level of judgment that we also apply to this, because an audit is not all 100% factual evidence that you would have seen, but you have seen sufficient factual evidence for you to be able to make an informed conclusion about the state of affairs and so far as those three issues are concerned. And that's why we bank on experience. We bank on people who have at least got the profile that I indicated earlier on in terms of technical training experience, because it calls on them to say, on the basis of the representations that were made by management and the leadership of the institution, together with the evidence that you examined, what is the right conclusion? Is it an unqualified opinion with no significant matters? If the evidence bears such and our evaluation of a combination of other sources of information that we use in the audit, we will arrive at a conclusion and sign upon it. And then the third category will be that which is about those institutions that have done well in the third part, which is about reporting accuracy on the financial statements, but have not managed to deal with all their deviations either in the area of determined objectives or in the area of compliance with laws and regulations. So if they didn't master those two together with the rest, they normally get that which we call an unqualified with other significant matters. And those significant matters are the issues that we report directly to management in the management letter, as well as those that we report in our financial statements if they are significant for that purpose. And then the third component that we have in terms of our category of opinions that we issue is a qualified opinion. And the qualified opinion will normally be where the first part, which is financial statement examination that we did, has not been complied with, but only in limited areas. For example, you'll find that the manner in which they have accounted for fixed assets in their books, which is not necessarily agreed with. So it will be significant by the nature of the item as well as the amount involved. However, it is just a disagreement with us that is limited to the particular item of assets in financial statements. And in a number of instances, they would either have non-compliance with laws and regulations or deviation from reporting accurately on their predetermined objectives. Then the fourth component of our audit opinion, which you will find also in our general report, will be an adverse opinion. An adverse opinion will be where, as far as the financial statements are concerned, which is the first component, there are a number of areas where we disagree. We probably disagree, say, about 6 or 7 different areas of the financial statements on which that particular department or municipality is supporting. And therefore, because of that, as well as also deficiencies in the next two issues, we normally issue what is called an adverse opinion. Our finding is adverse because it is prevalent in quite a number of areas. And then the last one is in respect of trying to find this evidence, but the evidence never comes forth because nobody has done proper findings and nobody has done proper document management and nobody is able to explain most of these transactions and so on and so on. Then we also say, well, if you don't know, we also don't know. And that's what a disclaimer is. In the case of if you don't know where it is and what it is, then we are none the wiser. So we disclaim the opinion because we can't express it in the absence of the evidence that we need to report it. So those are 5 key things, Chair, which I think you need to also, as you were saying earlier on, make sure that you also keep an honest on it, because it's about that journey that we will be working together to appreciate and understand what we are trying to drive and what it is that we ought to be helping each other grow and develop better so that we can maximize the effort of driving governance and accountability in the system of administration. I thought that's a nice feature of what I was saying, Chair, here on pretty much depicting the story that I was talking about earlier. there's quite a peculiar situation in the way that we've designed our delivery. And it's dictated largely by the fact that we only have a 31 March year-end for government, so that is as far as the PFNA is concerned, as well as the 30th of June for municipalities. Now, the whole cycle basically tends to flow one next to the other, almost because of the analysis that goes behind the scenes as well. But on top of that, the real capacity to do all of that which is required in terms of your master audit and report all of the 3 years, capacity-wise, if it were to include everybody and everything that we are referring to there, it wouldn't be possible and feasible for the institution to have those people on board to do it. Because the other issue will be that you only have one or two peak periods, then what happens outside of those peak periods if you were to gear up 100% for your ideal number of people. So the design of our delivery, which we now have, as depicted in that program earlier on, is bolstered in addition by what we call contract work that we allocate to private firms. These are all the registered firms of auditors that operate, as you know, in South Africa, the likes of Deloitte, Roboto, Ngongi, and many others, all of them. I think in our database we probably work with close to about 40 firms, big, small, and large, where we allocate work upfront based on a supply chain management process that we undertake upfront with very clear criteria that we evaluate and allocate work to those firms to assist us in the process of the delivery of our mandate. So this has been a practice that we have had over a number of years where quite a significant portion of the value of the work that we do, if you look at our budget, for example, just as a way of illustration, our budget for 2014 was just about 2.4 billion, and then about 600 million of that was delivered on our behalf by the old plans. So that 600 would have been passed. I'm talking about the 590 now, I'm just rounding it up to 6. The 590 budget total is what we had budgeted will be coming off the old plans that assist us, and the balance of it will be stuff that is done by us. So we've got a process that we have in place, and as you will see, there's a structure that has been shown in the presentation here, which has got different governance elements in the office, where the tender committee that drives this process is directly accountable to the deputy AG, who makes sure that we do a fair and equitable allocation across different issues that we look at. For example, capacity, footprint of the firm, their history in terms of the quality score that is awarded to them by the independent regulatory board of auditors. And so we negotiate the rate and we agree on how many hours work are we giving each firm based on the excess needs that we have to deliver work. So that's the other area that you will find in our financial statements when we look at the annual report, where we report specifically a line item in respect of work that we had pushed out for the private audit firms who are transacting with us contractually on an arm's length basis. And the disciplines that drive that process triggers a time that we need to do the allocation upfront. Now, that's just the journey as to the work that we do. We have been on a journey over the last couple of years, leading up to now, where we had identified 5 areas that we as an audit office believe we can make a significant impact in, over and above, and in addition to these 3 components that I referred to, which we report on in our financial statements. We have taken a journey over a period of time in our strategic plan to say we've got to be clear across the board in the office what is it that you are driving. And these are the 5 goals that former AG Terence Nombembe committed to, and that's the stuff that we've been working on over the last 6 years. Our strategic goals and strategic plan, as I said, for 2014 to 2015, is the conclusion of that phase that we are driving over the last 6-7 years, which was the area of simplicity, clarity, and relevance of our message. That's the stuff I was talking about earlier, where I said we then go around and look at the details behind what is contained in the financial statements by way of analysis, by way of regular interaction with the leaders of finance and other players in government departments and municipalities. So we've been spending a lot of time trying to sharpen the message, try and make it simple so that it is clearly understood by a broad range of people. When we talk about what drives audit outcomes, we normally say there's a lack of consequence, for example, for wrongdoing. Part of that assessment is coming out of the analysis that we look at when we discuss and interact with the leadership of the institutions to try and find a way that we can position the message behind these deficiencies and financial statements. The second area of strategy focus was also the visibility of our leadership. This one, if one looks at the journey over the years, Chair, if that program there where the Auditor General identified institutions that we are going to build proper relationships with, so that we can encourage them to play their role in the governance and oversight of the institutions that we audit. Because that was one of the areas that we examined was not being taken care of. A number of times you would find people saying, no, but we didn't think that we are supposed to get involved in the things that have to do with finance. There are things that have to do with administration. And then we invested the time to try and get them to see the value that they will derive from this. We found that the stakeholders that we interacted with were assisting also in the journey towards the improvement of administration generally. One of the programs that we undertook around this one, Chair, was a door-to-door campaign that we did in all of the 9 provinces. We went to every single municipality by province to interact with the leadership of those institutions and persuade them to commit to improving the issues that are prevalent in the reports that we are distributing. And there's been quite a lot of positive feedback in a number of places. Some of them are still struggling, but at least we know that with our interactions on a quarterly basis with them, they are starting to take serious note of some of the financial management and governance weaknesses that they need to embrace. So that has been a help, and we are busy evaluating the way forward in respect of that. And we do indeed think that our continuous involvement is helpful, and we always make sure as we do it, we also maintain our independence so that at least we can objectively evaluate whatever comes through must be implemented by management, and ours is to evaluate whether they've done the right thing in order to improve administration and governance. The area of funding was the third strategic area of focus, where we said we collect our fees by invoicing the people that we audit directly. So we do not have a specific appropriation that goes through the process of appropriation here. We have a process where we submit our strategic plan as well as our areas of focus to the committee, who will reflect on it and take a view. But that is effectively our go-ahead to say, yes, based on what you say you will do, you can then proceed to go and issue the invoices as you would have agreed with your direct auditees. So that is a fundamental issue, because quite a lot of other audit institutions over the world have got a different funding model. Most of them are funded directly by their parliament through a specific appropriation, whereas here we've got a different model which is almost similar to what a non-audit firm will do. You know, we go out and we say this is the extent of work that I need to do. It translates to 5,000 hours, and the average rate for all of the levels of people who will be involved in it is X amount, and those together come to what the proposed budget is. Let's talk what we think. Are we in agreement or not? And then we get into the boxing ring, and then we ultimately find each other. And then there's an understanding that this is what we will pay based on the work that we will do. So it brings a lot of accountability as well, because we generate this from a value that we have created. But at times we also struggle to collect what we have put on the table. And I think there's a story that will be shared in the annual report in respect of the slow response, positively now, which we have detected is coming from some of the institutions that are likely to pay, but the numbers are still big in terms of outstanding fees that we still are likely to collect, particularly in the area of municipalities. And you'll see in our analysis, not only in the annual report, if you have not yet looked at it, we have done detailed analysis to show how this debt has aged over time in respect of municipalities. Now, that's one big issue for us, if I may, Chair, which I think if one looks again at some of the slides where we talk about the role of the committee, as we understand it, that's one of the issues that the committee might need to be seized with and to assist us with as we go forward, because it's a strain if it is not corrected that could impact on the financial independence component. There's a couple of components that we value in respect of the rest of it is the operational dependence and the financial components, because if we then squeeze and not able to collect, it will be difficult to make the commitments and to operate in the pursuit of this mandate. However, it also comes with the responsibility as to how we spend that, which is also in our hands, which I think the members will also have a look at when we look at our annual report as well as our accountability reports that come in the future. Left on the stewardship, our own stewardship now, in respect of that which is in our care, because we do this to check others. And we also are also very jealous of our own environment when it comes to managing responsibly, because it's one of the key licenses that we have to pull out to the public domain, because we can at least say to them, we are also doing the things that we say we must do. Otherwise, if we didn't have that, then it would be difficult to make them see the way we recommend improvements in financial management.
I'll try to listen to my voice. Let me stop now. My daughter is not singing now.
Thanks very much. The area of human resources is another strategy focus area. As it were, it derives from our people, our valuable asset type of situation. And of course, in order for any of these audits and any of the staff that is in our mandate for it to be delivered, it will require a lot of investment in developing people, training them, and continuing to nurture them along the way, because as people grow in this profession and this kind of work that we do, the more they get insights and experience, the more they become smarter at making sure that we can arrive at these conclusions much quicker with less pain. And that's the way effort is going, developing quite a young core of accountants and auditors across the country. Many of them we provide support internally in the organization while they are busy completing their academic studies. Many of them have come through the final qualification. As you can see, we are tracking close to 500 as far as chartered accountants are concerned and many other disciplines. So there's a huge amount of investment that we put into growing and developing our own financial and auditing skills. And don't hold on jealously to them, because we understand that the economics of our design will not support 100% absorption. So we go into this game knowing that there will be those that will find the green grass on their side, and we don't hold on to the fact that we provided you training, therefore you must remain here. But at least we also have our own targets that we use from drawing from our own training and so on. This human resource area, we do a lot of investment in it. We support bursary holders. We participate in TOTOKA schemes to assist in many places, for example, universities like the University of Porto, where we draw talent from. We've also got an in-house learning and development function where we try and develop our own material to train our own people instead of relying on external people who may not have the type of experience specific in terms of auditing in the public sector and so on. And then the last goal on our horizon is the Levi example. And I've just made reference to it that we guide jealously the maintenance and the retention of good and excellent standards in terms of our own operation, as well as to make sure that we continuously improve. And sometimes we trip up ourselves when we do the work that we do in terms of the administration of the office, and we take immediate actions to fix those things. So this is an area for us as well to sustain the growth, because we operate, as I said, across disciplines in 9-10 provinces. So things never always flow through as you design them. But I think what we pride ourselves with is that once we detect those weaknesses, we deal with them decisively upon detection and don't allow them to fester in our environment, which we think that is a very important strategic goal, because it continuously reminds us that we also have to act happily and also demonstrate our own competence in doing the work that we are entrusted to do as an administration of the AGSA. If I go outside the country, we also have commitments in the international environment. We go back many years, Chair, where the International Organization of Supreme Audit Institutions is the international body of all auditors general across the world, I think there's now membership of about 194 countries that make up Interrail. It's a global body which was brought into being about 1953 from its inception. Yeah, it was 6 years old now. And our former AG from 2010 to 2018 was the president of the international organization. And I must say that in the feedback that we got, as well as the reflections of the last congress that we went to, which was in Beijing last year, when we handed over the chairmanship to China, they were very pleased and commended the effort that South Africa is putting to that global space in terms of the development of various elements of attitude in the international space. We had that 3 years, I think, as one of those that will be remembered, because we also contributed to the development of the international standards on supreme audit institutions. When we chaired the working group on the value and benefits of supreme audit institutions across the board, which resulted in a resolution of Congress at Beijing in 2013, and many other efforts that we have put into this, and one of them was the collaboration that the former AG led with a number of AGs, which sponsored a resolution at the General Assembly in the United Nations on the working on the value and benefits of supreme audit institutions across the world, which resulted in a resolution, UN Resolution 6609, which was cementing the global leadership on the role of audit institutions in the world and what countries need to do to support them and to nurture and develop them, particularly going forward into the post-2015 development agenda. So that was a significant global contribution that we have made, and I think it comes to the back also of our physical involvement as an office in the audit of the United Nations, when we, together with the likes of China, Britain, Philippines, and a couple of other countries, where at any one time the United Nations, the whole of the United Nations is audited by those three countries who form a UN board of auditors. We spent 12 years, and our 12 years expired in 2012. So we had the field footprint and people in the office who had that international experience, which had come from HACCP to provide people to go to various audits, including the Global Pension Fund and many other funds of the United Nations and peacekeeping missions and so on. So it's been that journey over time internationally. And when we stepped down from our presidency of ITOSAI, we were asked to replace the Supreme Audit Institution of Morocco as the chair of the Capacity Building Committee. The 6C that reflected on the slide is one of the four goals of ITOSAI at the level of the Council Board, which drives the implementation of the international organization across the board. So I currently chair that Capacity Building Committee of ITOSAI, and we are in fact tomorrow having to travel there now for our first global meeting since we took over this chairmanship. It's happening in Peru next week, starting on Monday for the week. So that's very important area of work, because this capacity building committee has been in place for 9 years now, and it was under the leadership of Morocco. So ours is then to drive the team to the next level so that it can respond to some of those global initiatives that are happening across the world. Our people are also involved in a number of working groups in their own right to contribute to the development of international standards, to contribute to the development of mechanisms to audit better in specific strategic areas of financial management in the world. For example, Eugene Zungu was recently in one of the interactions where, arising from one of the topics that was tackled in about 6 years ago on the audit of public debt, there was a working group that is focusing largely on all countries are contributing their fair share of how best to go about doing that. Others are involved in areas of auditing in extractive industries, because there's a growth of extractive industries in the likes of the continent and in other continents as well. And there's a collaboration across the board to say if these extractive industries are going to bring value because of what they produce, they also tend to bring some cases, because on the back of it, when governments face certain things tend to lead to situations where there's instability and so on. So we've got those circles of collaboration, which not only involve us, but also involve our people in specific areas. And our involvement in this chair, I'm sure when we talk about our strategy plan, we'll also give you more insight as to the other areas that we are involved in. But it's part of our global network of auditors general. We host a number of events when people want to share from a capacity building committee angle. They want to share our journey. Some of these countries we have not yet got the strong legal instruments to support their existence. They often come to us and we will host them for however many days they are here and so on. So there's an ongoing collaboration peer to peer as well as region to region. For example, in the African continent, we are also part of the African Organization of Super Remote Institutions. And for purposes of the AFROSID, which is the English speaking body of this African body, we host the secretariat in South Africa. That's the journey, Chair, and including our international footprint. Now we're going to deal with the working relationship of the office and the committee. As we understand it, Chair, those are the pronouncements that we've picked up. I'm not going to go through them in any specific detail, but certainly the accountability of the office to the National Assembly, as well as reporting on its activities and its functions, and that is happening via the Standing Committee on the Auditor General as the oversight mechanism. That's it. The strategy plan and budget, as well as our integrated annual report, are the main accountability instruments that trigger the engagement that we will have on an ongoing basis with the committee, starting with bringing our own accountability on the table, as well as reflecting on what journey are we on going into the future, which the committee will be interacting with us on an ongoing basis. So the annual report, as I said, is already done, has been tabled. The chair has already had a brief engagement with the deputy AG and the chair of the committee to process things in preparation for that interaction. And we'll have this interaction on the annual report, I'm sure, when the day is spent. And soon thereafter, I think we'll also share with the committee what we're busy cooking at the moment, because the strategic plan, as we said, those five goals that we shared, has now come to a point where we've had to sit back and say, how then do we take all of these gains that we have made over the last couple of years to the next level, so that we can continuously bring a qualitative difference in the manner in which we conduct our work as well as our activities. So we're going to be sharing with the committee then that strategy plan, which will bring a picture of where our journey is headed over the next 5 to 10 years. And we'll bring a picture with the committee, but we'll come back and say, but this is what we want to start establishing in our track plan, which, once we have gone through the interaction, we have to commence from 1 April 2015. We are currently now on the tail end of the one area with those five goals, which will end on 30th March of this year, the current year that we are on now. As soon as this year is over, and the strategic plan, the new one which we will give to the committee to commence. And I think the timing was good, Chair, in that at least the committee is coming into being now, and we are also starting to shake off some of the things from our past to take those that we will be moving forward with, as well as to share with the committee how we all have. So that at least over the next 5 years, as we engage with the committee, there's at least a clear blueprint as to what the journey is as we see it. And we hope that we will have that interaction, as I said earlier, before the end of the year.
I need a quickly speak. I was very enthusiastic when I saw the words, so I thought, let me put every single word that I can think of.
Chair, there's a couple of other technical provisions I guess that you wanted to highlight, which are basically giving us the latitude to constitute a remuneration committee or any advisory structure, basically. What we have had over the last 7 year term of former AG, because of that provision, there was an advisory structure. It really is a structure of people that the AG can happily identify, you know, of various backgrounds and so on. And then when we have to go through the strategy planning process, I've got a cohort of experienced people that
I can bounce off this. I don't have to agree, or I do not have to agree with whatever they say. I just want people that I can work with. It's effectively that. So that's the kind of advisory structure that was in place, which I think is useful because it's very experienced people either in their accounting or in any other profession. And they know that when they go there, they are not going there to say, what do you do with that thing that you said you must do last year? No, no. It's about, these are things that I am thinking of doing. Do you have any insights that you want to share to advise on any pitfalls potentially, or to help with any ideas that I might also explore? So it's a question of you take it or leave it. You know, if you say I must do a particular thing and I don't feel comfortable about trying it, I said no, try and we'll look into it. And there. So it's really just a forum which needs one to interrogate anything that the AG might want to deliver it on. And then the appointment of the audit committee is also the task of the committee as we are meeting there today. So that's part of the agenda in terms of the appointment of the audit committee is largely delegated to the Deputy AG, and we normally do it internally, but we inform the committee once we've done that. But appointment of the auditors is also confirmed with the committee of the annual renewal of the auditor. So that normally comes as part of the agenda of what is in the annual report. When we're taking the annual report, we will deliver it on that. As indicated in the public body deck, the WAG is the head of administration and is responsible for management of administration and so on and so forth. So that's how we have designed the way things happen. As you'll see in that structure, I look like I do not have anything to do there. And the DAG has got all these people that are gathered around her. And that's really, there's a lot behind that structure that happens to make sure that we're all on track, we're all aligned, and we all are gearing towards the same thing that we had agreed on. And of course, because of that role, the accounting officer is the deputy AG, and I'm sure when we come for the annual report, she signed the annual report, and so she will have to also talk to it exactly as an accounting officer, and so that's coming to make sure that we have it. We don't say this and we don't do it, as well as the decisions that the deputy AG carries out are actually stuff that we have a conversation about, and we agree on all manner of deviations and all that, so that we can make sure that we don't bring unnecessary problems to ourselves when we have to deliver so much important work. We try and make sure that we streamline our activities and areas of accountability in the way that the Act had foreseen in terms of how we've defined. Like I said earlier, Chair, we have already tabled the annual report, and we are a month earlier than what we are required in law. So we've beaten the law in terms of the taping of the annual report. It's already there. The first plan is, as we said, hopefully mid-October, and meeting that we will have with the committee, I will be leading the team, but in instance as well, there's an urgent matter that needs to be handled, and the issues that need to be dealt with, and the place and barriers, it will always be a delegation to the deputy AG or anybody else if they are to pass it in that regard. But we will continue, I think, in terms of that interaction between ourselves as the office and the committee. We will continue to work through the notariat to align those. Some of the constitutional and legislative responsibilities, just extracted these, Chair, just as a reminder, I'm sure members would have gone through this already. It's definitely a reminder to say these are some of the key things in that small book with so many sections and so on, but at least if we pay attention to this one over the next while, we will help each other in trying to achieve our common objectives, both your overhead responsibility as well as our own accountability to yourselves in respect of the things that are set out in law. And so those are just a quick reminder. Spoken about the areas of oversight to us, clearly the annual report and related matters. Committee annually considers the annual report and financial statements, as well as our audit report on these financial statements. We also have a set of officers, as you will see in the annual report, who are appointed under the direct supervision of the audit committee. So that means that audit us is not allowed to be part of those firms that are dished out work. More than 590 million budget is shown here for the contract work. This firm that does our audit as an external auditor is not allowed to participate in that contract work because that contract work is dished out by us. So they can't be overseeing us from the audit as an external auditor and then be able to, and then at the same time do audit on our behalf because it might impair their independence and objectivity because they know that they have a financial interest in buying to grow their work and so on and so forth. So both in terms of perception and actual fairness, it may not be the right thing to do. But the audit is a standard rule. That's why when we choose firms, we've always got a limited number of firms to choose from. Because people weigh the opportunity between growing your value of work from contract work versus the limited growth that you will get from the auditor general, because when they agree their fee for their own audit, they tend to be misers and try and squeeze the hours and all that. So they know that that work is not going to come because the audit office is not going to expand its mandate. It's already got its finite mandate. So the potential for growth in terms of person doing business with us is limited compared to the potential for growth when they are doing work of one municipality and can grow in another and so on and so on. So that's the issue that we normally focus on when it comes to the appointment of the external auditor. The budget and the business plan we will present, as I said, in the next couple of months. And the role of the committee again there is about making recommendations which will be forwarded to the CIVA for tabling in the National Assembly in terms of our budget plan. And also there's a requirement for giving an opinion on our audit fees, which we also bring in an extra with the submission of our budget plan. Consider a report from the AG on any matters pertaining to under collection of revenue and so on. That's part of what is required there. Chair, we have not done that before because there was no real significant need for that to happen. But at least in the event that we need to, we will obviously have to talk and have and make sure that even if the things you want us to submit a nil return, if necessary, we can do a nil return. Consider report from DAG on decision of AG to incur irregular expenditure. AG does not incur irregular expenditure. But those are the requirements checked in the event that any of the staff was to be reported. The standards that will be applied to audits. As I said, we respond to international standards on auditing. We respond to the international standards on supreme audit institutions when we design the work that we do, as well as deploy the people that will do it. And we come to the committee at the end of the year when we submit our threat plan to say, here's our audit directive. We will be auditing the institutions that we audit to these staff, and then we enter into an interaction with the committee to assess whether the committee is of the same mind as in terms of the appropriateness of those standards. We've got a code of conduct for those authorized auditors. Among the things, for example, in the code would be the issue of them not wanting to double up the work that they are doing, consulting type services, for example, we bar them from being an auditor in terms of the statutory accounts and coming with another division to provide services to the same institution. So those are the kind of things that we have in our code of conduct for authorized auditors. So that even though they are not our employees, but at least they subscribe to the rules that we believe will enhance performance and independence. Yeah, then the last bullet, Chair. I think I've done less than 2 hours now. It might be an hour almost, and I'm sure I'm 10 minutes to go, and then we can get more busier. This is the last point I wanted to deal with. I've spoken about the international integrated annual report. It's coming. It's already on the table. We just will get a date. The strategic plan for going in the future, we are busy in the cooking room with this one, and things are being finalized. As soon as we finalize it, we'll raise our hand, Chair, but I'm sure it will be before the end of this year to come and engage again with the committee on how do we see the horizon? Is it brighter? Is it more dim, and so on and so forth? And how do we want to tie it with it as an institution? And how do we want to position ourselves to be able to continue to play our role as the supreme institution in the country? The external also annual confirmation will be part of what's on the agenda of the annual report. One of the things that comes out in terms of the preparation of the annual report is also the requirement for engagement on the retention of surplus. Because when we do our budget, sometimes we invest, or more often than not, we are not able to actually get the exact amount. There's always a little bit left in the kitty, and then we would want to also have an engagement with the committee as to what ought to happen with regard to that. In the past, they've had a similar engagement with the committee, but I'm sure it will continue as part of the annual agenda of approving the annual report. I spoke about the audit directive, and the last bit in terms of the matters for attention is that, as I said earlier, it's squeezing because it's concentrated largely, and we understand this because a lot of these municipalities do not really have a very, very strong income base, but the combination of that and significant inefficiencies that are there, which require us to audit regardless, is what normally attracts an expensive audit fee. And you find many of them saying, oh, but these fees that you are charging us are exorbitant and all that. And the issue, among others, is because when people have to search for documents and have to search for things in certain areas, it does double up the time. And many of them struggled over time to pay these fees. And I know that there's still a lot of them in provinces like the Northern Cape. You'll find a lot of them in provinces like the Eastern Cape and Northwest and so on. And in our report, in fact, in the annual report, you'll see how we demonstrated that. Other provinces do from time to time battle, but these are isolated areas that they are battling. And we understand the economics and the struggle many of them have, but I think we need to continue to focus on this matter so that it doesn't progress over time. The last thing we want is to be left high and dry, like we have to continue implementing what is expected of us in terms of the money. So we'll bring the analysis of this, but there is depiction of how the debt is profiled currently. If one looks at the total debt in terms of those three-digit numbers are the millions that are shown in the bottom. So it's been escalating over time in terms of the amount of spending, but we've got no, even though there's a provision that says that we must take legal steps, it's probably not encouraged because so there are other cooperative governance arrangements that are more important to deal with than to try and get all municipalities that are not paying into the court system. But we need to persuade and try and try and try. Some of them come and say, yes, no, we understand, we'll pay you, and then get the payment, but others are still struggling. So we would like to have some interaction with the committee on this matter so that it doesn't constrain us. As I said, Eastern Cape, Free State, those green bars are the current year, the green bars, so all the ones that are shooting up, clearly the Eastern Cape, Free State, Northern Cape, Northwest. The others are telling, but at least the numbers are not too high in comparison. In fact, in our hydro statements, when we present them, members will see that we have put in adequate provision in the books to account for areas where we may struggle and struggle for a long time before we can get the money in the bank. So we've provided that basically for it. I think the provision has been growing over years as the credit control recovery process accelerates. And Chair, that's the long and short of the insights that we wanted to share with the committee. I'm aware that you made indicated we may also need to talk about journey forward, but this I had put a promise that is coming, and it is a promise that we undertake to fulfill.
I'm not sure if I allow your colleagues to contribute, or is it once the AG has spoken, he's spoken. Is that how it works? Okay, thank you very much. We allow for members to interact. Remember, members, we're going to have an in-depth discussion around accountability when they come and see us with the annual report and strat. And this really was to give us a taste and a feel. And I'm not going to limit you if you want to ask questions, but there will be. But before I do that, it pains me to have to do this. Uh, sincerely apologize on behalf of the ANC to ANC members that we were less than honest. We should have told you that you're going to have at least a counting or an auditing 101. Because you can't evaluate standards if you really don't understand. So the DA will have to go and apologize to the AM members and so will the ESF and the IFP. They should have warned you, right, that this is not an ordinary committee. It's not about politics of whether you put a house or something. If you really want to oversee the Auditor General, you're going to have at least a little bit of insight. Because ours is going to have to be, do we think that the standards that is being applied by the AG are adequate? Now, if we have no idea what a standard is, then So, I'm saying over and above all those as the scout studies that you are doing, you're going to have to do some little bit of work just to understand the basics of auditing and accounting. Otherwise, these good people that we are overseeing are going to run things around us. Now, I'm sure AG knows that DAG, maybe not. One of the things that I've said to everybody that has come to account to us, whether it was in Malaysia, Scopa or Correctional Services, rest assured that when you come and account to any committee that I chair, that committee has done its homework. Rest assured that that's going to be the case. We can't have a situation where officials or somebody come and ask, and we don't care because politicians don't read, we'll run the rings, or they prepare the night before. This committee in the next couple of years, the next time you come, they will have known all the ins and outs. So I'm just giving you that kind of warning that they will have prepared. Even if it means we're going to go on a crash course, we'll do that as a committee. The other thing is, I don't know if it's across parliament, but certainly in the committees that they are been operating in. The normal standard is that if you come and have an interaction with us, we would like our documents at least 7 days before, so that members are able to read. Don't come and dump documents on the morning of the presentation, because it didn't fit the objective of effective oversight. So those are standard things that members will hold me accountable to. So if I call you to a meeting and you haven't received the report, then you're at liberty to say, my chairperson, how do we go into an effective oversight if you're only getting it now? And I'll fight with my bosses alongside me, because they must make sure that these reports must be given to us at least 7 days, and then they must come and complain if they're not getting it from the principal to these 7 days, so that we can have a meaningful interaction. So, yeah, go and get out your accounting 101 and auditing standards, and you've got weekend homework, or at least 2 weeks or 3 weeks homework until they come and see us with their annual report. And let us just indicate to you, so that you don't ask this question, but AG did say between me and the DAG, we would finalize and tighten it up on the basis of all of us. What we had planned in terms of the further interaction, the real oversight, is that, and we've got 2 days, because I have to negotiate this with the powers that be whenever we want to, but we're looking at mid-October, around about the 15th and 16th of October, for them to come back and talk to us on the annual report, which you probably would have. If you don't, please make sure you get it, because it's in table. So they'll come and talk to that report to us around about the 15th or 16th, depending on all our availability. And then a week later, we'll then have an interrogation of that report. So they'll come and present, this is what's in our annual report, this is what we've done. We'll go and look at it, and as a committee, interrogated and called back a week later, around about the 22nd, 23rd, to then have an in-depth discussion around their annual report. And then, around about the 12th, 13th of November, we are going to call them back to discuss with us their threat plan. And a week later, 19th, the 20th of October, we'll then have a discussion whether we think that threat plan is going to take us anywhere. So those are the temporary days that we have. So there will be an action mid-October and action mid-November, two weeks. And beyond that, it really then will slow down. We'll probably need much less because then we'll have done these things. But these two we will have to cover in those days. So it's probably going to be 2 days in your life in October and 2 days in your life in November, both us and the AG. But we are we going to firm that up both of their availability and the availability of ourselves, depending on the house's program. And both those interactions, let me indicate, would be 15th and 16th, and those days are Wednesday or Thursday. So they're both going to be during the week. The only inconvenience that you're going to have is that it's going to be from about 12 o'clock. So if there's a house sitting, we'll make sure that it's not a three line up. If it is a three line up day, then we'll try and meet in T26, which is a proper road, suspend business for the day to go and vote type of thing. So I'm hoping that you don't have a problem with us meeting outside. We will go and request that from the powers that be, the chair of committee and so on. So both those interactions will be during the week, but they will be in the afternoons. If all else fails, then we revert to a Friday, but I'm sure that we could work something out. So that's really in terms of the program going forward. You don't have to ask when, it's going to be those days, but let me then open it up for just general comments, questions from the House. We will take five or six, then we'll allow you to respond, and we'll do a second round if needs be, and a third round if needs be. And once again, this was introduced without, because after this, I'm sure we all know we have our first name. So can we have an indication if there are members that would want to interact? Let's take Honorable Lowe, and followed by Ms. Carter, Honorable Carter, and I'm trying to read your name, ma'am, so forgive me, is it Mente? So you did the three honorable members. And then we will take Honorable Bosiello as number four, and then we will take you as number five, Mommy. Those orders. So let's then start with Honorable Snow.
Thank you, Chair. Before I go to the interaction with the presentation, I just want to comment on something that Friday is a working day. I think members should know that we're not here from Tuesday until Thursday. So, I mean, as you try to do a program, that should not be a matter. I think members should know that we've emphasized that even in the last thing, we emphasized that Friday is a working day. And it's always been a problem of members attending on Friday. So I just wanted to say that. And thank you to Auditor General on your presentation. I think it makes it easier for us to understand what is your office all about. It was a good presentation. Thank you for that. But in the presentation, I just have clarity seeking questions. But I'm just going to appeal to you that if you can give us a copy of your organogram, because it does not appear here. The answer in the screen, I could not see that clearly, and I have sharp eyes, so I had a serious problem about that. Chairperson, we've been in government for more than 8 years, and I know that we still have challenges that we have not yet dealt with. And some of those challenges, the chartered accountants that you are talking about, the 500 chartered accountants that you will be trying to recruit to come to the office, that we still have a problem of black people getting into the system. It's a problem for them to pass the exam of being chartered accountants. So I don't know, I mean, it's not a question tailored to you, because I don't think it's your challenge only, but it's our challenge as well, to see to it how can we put black people to be in the industry. Because I know that in many universities, there will be people who will be studying BCom accounting, but for them to progress to that level, it becomes a problem. So I think in our little corners, we're trying to make differences. We should really have something to do with the impact of that. And when you talk about your firms, you know, the external firms that you would have as the Auditor General, your Ernst & Young, and you know, KPMG's and all that, I think we need to make sure that we bring black companies on board. So that it's not, I mean, it's not going to be, you know, this is for this kind of people in the society. It's okay, we're impressed, it's good to see, especially women getting into, you know, the Auditor General. We are really proud of that. But we also want to see black people getting into the system as well. And my last question, is the municipalities that battle with the income. That most of the problem is some of them have problems with servicing, but the people don't paying out what they are supposed to be paying. As we interact with them, because at the end of the day, they need to do what they are supposed to be doing. How do you help them to make sure that they are assistance in place? For instance, there are times when you look at the book, that there are things that they really don't need to be, spending money on. And for instance, most of the municipalities now have got consultants across the board, and those consultants make it impossible and difficult for them to make service delivery or to put estimates, because I mean they have to pay them a lot of money. So I'm just asking if as you're interacting with them, do you advise them on what should they cut out as care by them to say, you know, some of these things are not necessary. You could actually employ somebody within the municipality to come and do this service instead of giving it to the outside people. Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I actually only have one question and then a couple of comments, and this should be to, for the Auditor General, it should be a very good indication of how well the Deputy Auditor gave us a presentation at the APAC training with that. So I think we covered most of it there. Thank you. Just on specifically on the, if I go to slide 11, the financial statement, one of the questions that I'd like to know is the AQ also looking at the actual management letters and not only the financial statements, so if it's your auditor's management letters. Then the predetermined objectives, really, if we look at that, that is linked to service delivery. Like the AG was saying, you know, you've got your house, what did we budget for? What did we say we're going to do? We're going to build houses. But the bottom line is the houses is just not getting lit. But one of the problems, and this is things that we need to find solutions for, one of the problems is we can, for example, go to much a big municipality right now. The foundation has been dug twice already. The houses get to roof height because once the budget has been approved and once the funding is received, it is 3 or 4 years later. So the cost is not that, it's not the same anymore. The costs are much higher. So by the time they get the money for the roof, the bricks have been stolen again. So that is the type of thing that really, it is linked to service delivery, and we need to find and see how we can actually put more pressure, but also get the process to be quicker in order for them to be able to implement. If you look at the working relationship, and that is more a recommendation, also linked to the service delivery side. But you know, the standing committee, as we said, the AG in this, or our committee, if we have a look, for example, the local government audit reports, I really believe, Chair, that we should also have access to those reports. And not only have a twice a year or four times a year. It is all linked to service delivery. And even if we have a meeting that is incorporated with SCOPA, but let us not just be a committee that is going to be there just for compliance sake. Let us be a working committee and be part of that process. The outstanding debt is actually a very sad situation. And it is not only the Auditor General that is not getting his money. You know, there are smaller businesses that are suffering too. And these are one of the things where I would really like to see, you know, from detailed reports from the municipality, what is the debt that is actually there? Because if business is closed down, it's employment that is going, I can tell you right now where I'm sitting, there are 9 companies that closed their doors in KwaZulu-Natal because they have not been paid. And those municipalities clean the debt. So, you know, it's pretty disturbing because you don't, it's a clean audit, but you don't realize what is really happening. Then the Deputy AG is going to say, oh, yes, she's stuck again, okay. I would really, one of the things I would ask is specifically that we need to look at, when we look at a compilation of the findings register, that we should have a register that has got a lot more details, especially in your municipality, where the work is generally the same type of thing that's got the processes, the procedures would be the same. So once we compile that and we do our five ways to get to the root cause analysis, and we take that, but we actually also have a 5 W and possibly look at trying to implement the procedure in order for the, a new person walking into the job is not trying to start the whole process from, you know, from the procedure. It is there, it is in place. So I really want to make that recommendation that, that we seriously look with a compilation of a findings register that we actually set systems and procedures up from there. Oh,
thank you.
I'm actually covered by the first honorable. So really, the issue of Friday shouldn't be an issue to the person. You shouldn't be worried about that. We are working from Tuesday to Friday. Having said that, today is your introduction day in terms of telling us who you are, what do you do. And in that same breath, I would like to know, does your office offer some assistance in terms of correcting what you gave us under compliance with the laws and regulations on the five key factors that are under that, especially the two last ones, which is the adverse opinion and the disclaimer. In order for your office to not get these types of outcomes, is there any other mechanism that your office offers for all the sphere of government to not submit this type of report? On the outstanding debt, I'm covered also by Honorable Carter, but I'm really concerned about the debt of Eastern Cape, given the state of the local government in Eastern Cape, and it's shockingly high, 78 million right now. Can we then have a way to get through this? And lastly, I didn't get the definition of the RGA. You have 336 in terms of your data profile. What is RGA? Thank you.
Pinkos. Social on Roma.
Thank you, Chair. I think there's a set of problem financial accounting at the FET colleges. I'm not sure whether it's part of the AG's mandate there, because one of the colleges that was serving as a council member, where you have audit fees triple what they agreed on, they appointed them. And nobody's picking it up, and I'm not sure whether it's been allowed to say if we agreed on hindrance when we sign an agreement to audit, then when we read the statements, then we charge the 100 rand. And you can see that there are no qualified people at the FET college to look at this note. So I'm not sure whether it's part of your mandate, and if it is, how are you going to assist them? One of the challenges also that the colleges have, I think also the university will have, is the issue of student debt versus the funding. Because one of the issues is that they don't know whether they should capture them, you know, as bad debt or what should, how should they deal with it, because they depend on government for funding. So it's one of the things that makes them not to work to that qualified report. The last issue is that these colleges, the FET colleges, I think they're main, they don't even bother to do the financial statements anymore, or the drug plan, or the annual performance plan. And they just go on as if nothing is happening. You know, in Kukuni, I'm serving as a council member, the last time they take out their financial statement, they say it's 2011. And I'm asking myself, who's checking? Who's supposed to check that, you know, they do that? But they get the budget to continue to work. So I'm not sure how they can be assisted, because I don't think it's the only college.
Thank you, Honorable.
requesting that it needs to be, you must say it in your annual report and present it to us on the day. It's an issue for Ms. Patton on the checklist. The first one is the public Chair indicated earlier on that we are really, we are to do the oversight on how, you know, the system that you follow when execute it. And the only way to do it for us is to look at the Public Act itself, whether the Public Act itself is really covered what we are expecting from it. And to this stage, I think the Act is amended. It means a lot of amendment. So we would love to have that, and we'll come back to us, and we cannot decide that it's okay, but we need to have that share process. The trend towards that, what is also going on saying about the Act, because it has a lot of people. As a result, we can't be, as to our oversight, we're going to find our person while we can't do it, because it has an Act not necessary for that. Taking for an example, I'll give an example of the Act. What if you look at the functions of the auditor, the executive auditor in the government, one of the functions is to make sure that she collects, it's her job. She needs to make sure that she collects whoever is owing the auditor general. Could be our national department, it could be our municipality, it could be anybody, whoever that is owing, she must collect. And after that, what if they don't pay? Then the Act doesn't say anything. It's not what I'm saying. There's nothing. It's like, she might wait, but then what then? So you can say, I can't say, you can produce a license, but exactly on that, there isn't a specification. Now, the other thing that maybe we like to see is that we are doing well when we absorb people from school, from colleges, from universities, they go into the internship program. But do they have the retention strategy? Especially for, you know, a kind of account has access to resources. And they cost us government so much money to be where they are when we start from the internship. What is an intention? Can we discuss and engage so that for us as the committee are able to ask the question and that is where it is necessary. You have got your staff establishment. It's 3,249. Is that your staff establishment? Is that capacity that the Auditor General is having yet? I know we don't have the minus government, but at the same time we are overseeing an entity within government that is in charge of other people's performances. So if then they are held with that responsibility, we must leave it with example. Now, if you look at our rural municipalities, there's something that is written that the Auditor General needs to do something about it. So the 3,249, if that is established, it is establishment. If not, what help does it have to, I mean, in city command? The other thing that maybe we reverse another chair person that needs to be included in the annual report, if it's very appreciated. You know, you said it. You know, it always worries me. We look at the achievements. The auditor's report, but the outcome of auditor's report is based on the achievements, what you have achieved. You said you're going to buy the lake, you said you're going to buy the table, you buy the table, you keep the table, the order. Right. Let me say that the money is going to act on the other side, like it's fishing. Now, the money is going to be based. I was taking an example, let's take the auditor to our policy. There's like five programs. Okay? There's five programs. Now, between the indicators and the outcome, there's something that is missing in front of our policy. That's the auditor that needs to get hold of. So there is something that is a gap between the indicators. Because we come here to say, what you said you're going to do. And when we go to our exercise and mission, we go to so many committees, we go through the assessments for the department, we find that that part of specification is not there. I think it's said that the general generally has called this line a problem. It's not just administration, Now, helping you to get that outstanding money, I don't know how, because the specifications are lacking within the program of every department in our government. And you are assessing the achievement of that. That is a problem. I think both faculties are still checked. The standards, we need to look at that. That's what I'm saying, that don't need others to get by, it's just a problem with that. There's something missing.
Let me, before I allow Honorable Shoppers to probably, I just want Honorable Ntombela, Honorable Matlakhla, that you're going to say something before you leave here. You're going to say something. So just be prepared after Shoppers spoken about, I'm coming to you and then I'm coming to you.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, before I speak, I just want to assure you that every Friday when you need me, I'll be here. I've taken an oath consciously when I was told that I'll do everything in my power to take this country forward, and I'm conscious of that. If you need us to work on a Saturday, just tell us. We'll stay here and work on a Saturday. But you see, I'm saying this on a very serious note, Chairperson, because this is a committee that has worried me for a very long time in this parliament, casually, meeting casually. This is the committee that is supposed to support the office of the Auditor General to be completely independent. And can't do that in a casual manner. And I don't make meetings that come, hey, we just have 1 hour, whatever. We must talk about this thing so that we sort out our country. This is the Auditor General is overseeing the performance of our economy. We are worried about the economy, and we can't rush on everything. We've got problems, we've got challenges, and we need to face these challenges very bravely and honestly. That was just Auditor General, I just want to say thank you very much. You know, I was just looking at the numbers, 460 chartered accountants. Well done. I know what it takes to produce one chartered accountant. It's very difficult. Looking at the history of our country. And I also thank you because I listened to you when you were inputting. You said you know that they are not all going to stay in your institution. But you have decided to think outside the box and look at the country, not just the office. That is very commendable. And I also want to congratulate you and your predecessor for flying the country flag very high at international in the international space. Chairperson, there is something that I think as a committee, even if we are not inviting the Auditor General, we must, you know, in Shangana, we must, in the ANC language, we caucus. As a committee, we need to caucus and give ourselves time to caucus about it. The funding method of the Auditor General. Because, you see, I'm worried. I would like the Office of the Auditor General to fail to perform because of funds not being available because people were not able to pay. So I need us to have time to deliberate a little bit on that one. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Carter, you were not inside when I indicated to your colleague next to you and to Ms. Ntombela that Norma Ganjani, before you leave here, you can say something. You need to say something, so be warned. Let's go to Honorable Dome. Sorry. Yeah, it's one.
Thank you very much, Chair. was going to say something. Thank you very much. Chairperson, following the presentation by the Auditor General, I really would like to say the future is bright. I was quite impressed with the presentation, many of which you went about it. There are three issues that I wanted to raise, Chair. I am of the opinion that we put in too much emphasis on the clean audit as an outcome. On a clean audit to municipalities and government departments as an outcome. I'm just thinking, how could it be if we rather concentrate on the building blocks that leads towards the achievement of this outcome, rather than concentrating too much on what product we're going to get. Say, the clean audit will automatically come if we have the capacity to make it possible. Check, I have been to several municipalities. And I can tell you confidently that there are municipalities and even departments ahead that will never achieve a clean audit. There are such municipalities where a municipal manager is not clear about what he wants or is not well capacitated to run the institution. Qualification lies understanding local government and his municipality. Where you have a manager of a supply chain or a leader of a supply chain who does not have a clue of what should happen and expects such a municipality to get people, it's going to be very difficult. As I'm saying, those are the building blocks leading towards the clean audit. So I'm just saying in a nutshell, how would it be if we could clean the pigsty rather than clean the pig itself? I don't know what would be the take of the AG in this particular regard. I was saying, let's please concentrate on the kind of people that we have at the level of the municipality. You have the Committee on Capacity, the CBS, the CBC, or I said something like that in the presentation here, where the AG has got this capacity building committee at the international level. How about having such a committee at local government level, at the provincial government level, working with the School of Government, to train, to make sure that our officials are well capacitated and are even accredited in making sure that at the end of the term, we're able to say, these are the people who are going to make sure that we get what we want, which is in order. But we have capacitated them prior. Chair, I had an opportunity to interact with a company that was appointed by the Auditor General when they were presenting to us the findings of the Auditor General prior. And here I must admit that on that day, they put the fear of God into us. That unless you appoint us, you'll never see the right of day. You'll never get the what you want, that is in terms of capability. So, unless you appoint us. So I'm saying, what is it that the Auditor General does to making sure that municipalities don't experience that? Because throughout the year, you get these companies who are saying they're doing your books, but at the end of the year, you are at where you were before. Can you say a disclaimer or qualified opinion at all? And then the
the last special person is the family. Can't we find a way of assisting small municipalities? Because we have a situation where here is a small municipality does not have the capacity but is expected to have it all to the end. So, this municipality, I have checked, doesn't have money to pay the auditor general. But the auditor general is having the sort to not pass over the head of the head of the municipality. And they end up having to take the equitable share to pay the auditor general. How can we assist such municipalities? I'm just trying to say they also end up with a strain that makes it not possible for them to achieve what they want to achieve in terms of financial administration. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable McCaughlin, and will be followed by Honorable Carter.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I've been partially covered by what's been said before me, but I have a few concerns. My colleague over there, I wish I shared his optimism. At this point in time, I don't. Our economy is in trouble. We've borrowed ourselves to the hilt. We can't borrow any more money. And I think, as it is a national level, it's filtering down to local level as well, municipalities in similar situation. You know, it's a knock-on effect. And it's the same in a very small space as in a big space. Municipalities aren't paying you, not because they don't want to, it's because they can't. They don't have the money. They don't have the money because the citizens don't have the money to pay for the services they're getting. So we have this knock-on effect all the way down the line, and it needs to be addressed. Now, I appreciate that as an audit function, it's not your function to solve the problem, it's your function to investigate to see are municipalities performing, initially in a financial sense, but also in the follow-ons from their compliance aspects and the big term objectives. It's a very difficult thing to try and find an answer to or a solution to. But one of my concerns, I don't know, maybe you mentioned it, I didn't pick it up a bit, but is there a strategy that you have to try and phase out the private firms you're using? My concern with that is the private firms are commercial enterprises. They're there to make a profit. They have a profit motive. Your office doesn't. So you're at the mercy of private enterprise in terms of their fees when they come charge your office for doing audit work. Is there a plan for to increase the size of the audit general's office efficiently so that you can phase out the use of private firms? Because I think it would be far more cost effective. I also would like to know whether there are instances, I know you, when you do your audit, you also come with the management letter that's not made public and is just handed to the municipalities. And it's discussed with the municipal managers and so on, where you tell them about the other things you picked up and warning signs and things like that. Does it go any further? Is there some kind of IGR function between the auditor's office and the auditor general's office and other finance sections of government to try and find a solution? You're obviously picking up the problems, but is there any discussion between the AG's office and Treasury and the Department of Finance about how we're going to resolve those issues? Because it's all very well you discovering the problems, but it's just left there and the municipalities now have sorted out this problem. It has no way of doing it, otherwise it would probably have done it already. And I just think it perhaps a little more communication between the various departments, we might be able to find a solution to that problem. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, sir. And here we have the Honourable Carter.
What is very clear amongst most of the inputs here is the in line with what you were saying, ma'am, in terms of the reviewing of the PIA. I mean, it's either direct budget, it's fees that we are talking about. We can ring fence at inception before national treasury or the revenue is given to provinces. We could say ring fence the audit fees. And there is, like they do in the private sector, provisions. I mean, it's all about capacitations. So I think don't respond to that one. It's something that we're going to discuss. I really do think that it's something that we need to discuss because you will spend the whole day looking at it. But understand that we are concerned sufficiently that we cannot get to a situation that the Auditor General is incapacitated because we are not paid. We'll find a way of doing that. So I think that will be part of our focus that you were talking about, man. And then, yeah, the members feel that we really want to have an in-depth discussion, Fridays, whatever. I don't mean cooperating, but it's very clear that members are saying this committee is far too important to be a end-to-end committee. Just in the head, though, because in my interaction with the DAG, our initial plan was to have a two-day breakaway to discuss these things. And I said to her, no, let's first bring it here for a sense, because it's now very clear that members think that we need more than just a three-hour meeting. So you must just indicate to us. We'll then negotiate with the aging office. The very first year that I chaired this committee, we went to Monaghan or somewhere for 2 days to discuss the things we were talking about. We also left open, dealt with the threat plan on day one, dealt with the annual report on day two, dealt with whatever changes need to be done, and came back. But in case, and we then can relook the 15th and 16th and whatever dates I indicated earlier on, and we'll try and find a suitable time. But that's really up to you. So those things I could have put on the table, hey, so you can deal with everything else. But on a lighter note, with my clock when you give me a heart attack, Bob. You know, I never dreamt that there would be a day when the DA advocates for nationalization. You say, no, phase out of a private company. that's why I'm saying maybe I'll get the answer to that, but I'm not joking. You're going to respond to that one, but the minute you said it in my head, I was saying, hey, what? There's someone asking for nationalization. But no, that was just my naughty mind. But Adrian, you and your team deal with the paper. And others, you can always say, we don't have time, we'll take you to the in-depth meeting. This was just the initial exhaling of members. So if you want to defer some of them to our next meeting, we are more than welcome and accommodating of that approach. But over to you and your team.
Thanks very much, Chair, and thank you for all the questions. And thank you, Chair, for giving me the opening here to reinforce what you just said now regarding some of these. We can do justice when we are in a deeper engagement with Matai. But I'll try and attempt to deal with any number of the questions raised in broad strokes. That's one of the categories that was raised around the financial risk across in terms of the office. I think the Chair has reflected on certain elements of this financial risk, which will be adequately dealt with when the committee is busy, also in terms of the positioning of the financial circumstances, as it were, of the office. But I guess the one that is mainly direct now is the issue around the trading arounds, if I may call it like that, to trade by doing the work and get to issue an invoice. And then that trading account doesn't always translate into the cash in the bank. And I guess that's where major thing is, which we all accept that needs to be looked at. We will not be able to share some of the insights as well around how this all builds up together, because it might help us understand questions like, why do we prefer to have a combination of our people and our friends? Because there's been an exercise that has been done over time, which came up to the conclusion that it's actually more cost-effective across the board to have that combination. One is addressing the risk of peaks and troughs versus the rate per employee, who we must also care in regards to other infrastructure costs that we have, which is your buildings and many that we must gear up for. Whereas with private audit firms, we do this under our guidance and oversight, do it for that specified period of time, and then they can go to use the facility and buildings elsewhere which belong to them once they've given us their report. So we don't have to worry about them for 9 months as to where they're going to be accommodated and all this kind of thing. So that's the model that we've designed in respect of making sense of this. And then they'll say A plus B.
Very easy. Before you carry on, I'm looking at my friends there. Are you, I know you from the media and you are a serious stakeholder. Are you able to pick up what the AG is saying? Are you? Okay. Otherwise, I'm going to ask you to speak louder because you're going to be part of telling a good story. So you better hear it. It's very good to AG or good to you.
Oh, gotcha. So, as I was saying, then, as far as this financial journey that we all need to be seized with, there are many components to it that we may have good enough time to go through when we are in a university profession. So that's the one common editorial passport. That will cover the lives of, do you think the 3,200 people that you have are adequate? We'll deal with it in that context when we have the client engagement, because it will be a core focal area that we will address, the financial component. It will also deal with issues of retention of our staff. That is our preferred retention mechanism and all of that. And so under that model, under that heading, we will deal with those issues specifically. Then the issue of the delivery capacity, that also goes into the whole financial model. Because the capacity we've defined it between people that wake up every day and come to work, as well as those that must have come and do that, we say, that which we say they must do, and once we agree on what we said, they must deliver. We'll sign a check and pay them, and then they must go, because that's the only commitment they have. So we'll talk about that at least if we have a divine engagement. I just want to talk about the one part which deals with the clean audits. I say that I agree with the sentiment, you know, that at the back of all of these conclusions in regard to clean audits or otherwise is the rights of instability of administrative leadership in certain instances across many of these institutions that we audit. Issues around skills deficits abound in regard to what we examine when we go deeper behind what these court conclusions carry. Weaknesses in organizational design in certain instances, where when a supply chain management contract is entered into, the necessary checks and balances and controls inside the institution that need to ensure that it's done in accordance with prescripts, that the necessary oversight and transparency around those transactions is in place, sometimes fails because the ideal organizational design that you might have at the City of Johannesburg might be completely weak, for example, if you look at it from a Mbizana local municipality as an example. And those issues do have a contributing factor. And I think also when we look at, for example, where state capacity is weakest and where socio-economic pressures are greatest, you tend to find that correlation with the bad audit outcomes, because the capacity for the people to do that which is desired in terms of ideal standards of performance is not in place, but then the capacity in terms of the institution itself in that particular area is also not strong. So we agree that this is a journey, a developmental journey that is being undertaken to bring what was not there in local government and other institutions. Perhaps the way we normally put it as if most of what we are talking about was there before but got lost. I don't think that's the point that we are making. We are saying that we appreciate the fact that some of these institutions are even trying to gear up to these disciplines of transparent reporting and so on and so forth. But if not properly led upfront with the necessary checks and balances, some of that effort may not necessarily be realized. You know, and that is the position that we are making. So as we then look forward, and I just want to give you a taste of what we want to share with you in terms of the subject, as we look forward, we are also saying there was something in it, if one looks at those five capital plan issues that I raised regarding simplicity, clarity, and relevance, we've now taken stock and said, we think that when somebody opens a radio station and listens to a television program and read the paper, and they can relate to this thing called clean audit. It doesn't matter whether they understand it technically, but they can relate to it. in the sense that when they see the word, some truth has come in their mind as to what this is about. We've journeyed to get to that point. We were never there before. Audits were taboo. There were things that people never had any idea what they are about. They actually, some of them thought that it was just an investigation for somebody who is alleged to have done wrong. The idea has helped this journey. If one looks at that goal now, suddenly there's been a shift, even in their thinking and their appreciation and understanding, not just of those that are informed because they didn't read about it, but also those that now suddenly understand that when someone talks about clean audits, they're talking about something that's got to do with money that has not properly been put where it ought to have gone. At that first part of the journey that we have embarked on. And the thing, with all of that knowledge and understanding, perhaps now it may be a good idea not to put the thing on the ground and say, somewhere in the future you will have X number of clean audits. That's probably not the emphasis, but it's important because you've got to evaluate something against something that you can score. And I guess the issue now in terms of pursuing this clean audit ought to be a scoring mechanism that is used to appreciate where this journey is going forward. And this journey is about saying public institutions ought to aspire to a situation where they are able to handle financial management transparently and report on it in an environment that is properly supervised by people who have the appropriate level of skills, so that when an audit comes to evaluate what they have done, it does not inappropriately end up with a disclaimer of opinion because the basic disciplines of record management were not put in place in the first instance. I think that's the journey that we are trying to start moving into now. So you still say you are adverse, you are a disclaimer, or you are unqualified with no findings, in brackets, clean. But that's not the end of your journey. Your journey is about knowing that if this institution was given 120 million rand to deliver on specific services as articulated in its strategic plan, all that the auditor want to see is evidence that Yenalapa, Yakumalapa. And that is evidence to suggest that indeed that which has been recorded in the books is supported substantively by adequate evidence. Otherwise, if you end up with this claim, it's a case of Abnam Korla, you have no idea what documents about this transaction. It is an undesirable thing to be in. So we are emphasizing that point around this issue, that the journey forward does not seem to be the ultimate end is a clean audit. The ultimate end is a transparent financial management where somebody can tend to scrutiny and they have to account for funds that they were given responsibility to handle. And I think we will trust and share our thought plan to elevate those type of issues, so that even if we say we will gain over the next 10 years to drive and to influence that, but our audits are the main instruments that we use to go and audit, but to start reflecting and saying, now you've got this opinion, where in this game are you in terms of your journey towards achieving transparent financial management? Because if that is achieved, the chances are that when somebody has reported about what they have done with the money, the chances are that they will also be more than able to report about what they bought with it. Because it's too good having the debit and the credit in the right place when you can't demonstrate that which you bought with the money. Because the fortunate thing is that which you must buy with the money is not a decision that gets made every day. It gets made upfront. So you already know before you get the money that this money that I'm being given at this municipality is meant to achieve these things. And these things, for them to be achieved, I need people who are going to be in engineering, who are going to make sure that when the pipes that have been laid over the last 10 years, that somebody will make sure that there's proper supervision to make sure that they continue to carry water for the design period. Otherwise, they don't, they burst, and then there's big service delivery, and you can't find in the records when last was this machine fixed or preventative maintenance was done on it and all of that. And I was listening carefully this morning to the debate that was happening on the municipal manager conference that is happening in Melbourne, where the municipal managers were attesting to their journey about this. And one of them, in the one municipality where we have given 5 clean audits over the last 2 years, then that municipal manager spoke. He also spoke like us. I don't know where we are, the municipal manager of that municipality. But the way he spoke about the primary issues that are important for this, he mentioned exactly the kind of stuff that we do. And he says to his colleagues, the only reason I have these 5 years of successful clean audits is because we were diligent in finding the people who have the necessary skills to do the job.
the diligence in making sure that the political and administrative interface that the municipality respects the space that the others place in, even though they are interdependent in terms of achieving the goals that are in the strategic plan. He raised the fact that the proper governance and introducing daily disciplines of internal control is fundamental to any institution, so that you don't look over your back all the time. You're not the kind of person who signs a document just because somebody found you and run off to the airport and they catch you at the door and they say, this thing is urgent, I need to deliver it tomorrow, please sign. So those are the kind of issues that others are doing, who have been proven through our independent evaluation that the issue of clean audit to them is a reality. So there are many of those examples, I think, which we can start talking about in our strategic plan as well, how do we want to progress towards that journey as an institution. So that we don't put less emphasis on the need for clean audits, because we still need something that we can hold on to measure this thing that's being done for financial statements. But ultimately, the journey is about there's a trillion rand that gets spent in this country in the public sector environment for the budget. At least when we do our work as an audit office, we want to ascertain the use of the financial statements. That indeed what is being reported in respect of what that money has been used for has been tested, has passed the test of credibility and accuracy, and that the people who are reading it can at least rely on it. It's not a foolproof that it is an environment that does not have the risk of corruption or fraud. They can still be at risk. However, on the bigger scheme of things, you can almost be sure that what has gone through the books has actually been evaluated properly by the auditors. So that's the focus, Chair, that we will be driving and focusing on. And I guess what we'll do with the rest of the colleagues is to consolidate some of the comments that we have made as soon as we are finished. And we will package them such that we elevate some of the issues that we are raising now as we prepare for the presentation for that in-depth engagement so that we don't forget any of the stuff that you've raised. I deliberately tried to just deal with two of these three high-level comments without going into the details, because I'm sure when the necessary interactions have taken place and there's time to engage deeper, we will bring many of your questions that you've raised into our presentation so that we can deal adequately with them. If that's fine, Chair, I will hand back the chair to you. Thank you.
I'm not sure if it's fine with me. Let me just remind members and their indicate if it's fine. Mine is to facilitate. I think Ms. Knoll asked the question, what is your contribution towards increasing the pool of blank accountants? Now, if you're happy that it gets postponed to later, Ms. Knoll, you must indicate so, because that's what Daisy is asking. And then I think there was a matter around what is the meaning of RGA? If we're happy that it gets postponed until later, then we can indicate as much. Then there was the issue around, do we have a presence in FEC colleges, and they're never going to get clean audits because students don't have money to pay, and therefore it's bad debt, and how do you manage the bad debt? If honorable members are happy that that gets put later, then it's fine. I'll go with you. There was an overlapping mandate, I think, and members feel that we can deal with it in our future engagement, then it's fine. Those were some of the ones. And if you capture them and you deliberately said that you will then uplift them and give a comprehensive answer later on, I'm happy with that. But that mandate I must get from the people that ask the questions. That's why I'm asking them. If you are happy with it, we'll say to the AG, go away and come back. If you're not happy and you insist you must answer now, we'll make him answer now. So let's ask the AG.
Thank you, Chair. No, I'm covered. And also to add that to package, I'm just thinking as a maybe radical transformation or radical thinking, to say out of your 400 and odd number of data accountants that you have, would it be ideal to at least second one to all the departments, which are about 38? Like you were saying, you've actively assisted.
Are we ignored? You can't be the auditor and be a consultant, because you're asking them to consult, basically, by sending somebody. We will mess it up. But I think the question is, what is your role in ensuring there's capacitation? It'd be difficult to send more people, but we think you must take to us, what is your contribution to South Africa Incorporated in terms of capacitation? That's, I think, the real question.
I think, Chairperson, the questions that you have just said now, there are specific questions which I think we can help them. I think, what is the meaning of FGA and all that? I think it's something that needs specific answers, but if there's anything that they need to elaborate further, they can do that in the workshop. But I think some of the questions really don't need time and elaboration, but just to clarify them. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. The RGA is a registered government auditor. These are people, many of them in the office, as I told earlier on, they were professing in the office. For example, some people had a matric, and they worked in the office over a number of years because they were employed there way back in the 70s and so on and so on. Then when we started professionalizing office over the last 10 or so years, there was a requirement for there to be minimum competencies for staff because many of them were very aged and growing and so on, and it was not necessary to send them out and say they must go and study. So there was this institute that was set up which provides the certification for somebody who at least has a grade 12 who has already got recognition of prior learning and has worked and all of that. And then you go through a program where you register, and then you become a registered government auditor, which is one qualification in addition to the chartered accountant qualification, in addition to the information systems auditor qualification that we recognize in the office. And those people are a recognized group of people who are qualified as a registered government auditor. And the level of training and exposure and certification that they go through enables them to become auditors in government, and they are trained on various ways in which government is running, issues like the constitution, the light of MFMA, PFMA, and rules around management of public finances is their core area of competence that they get trained in. So that's what that RGA, and it's an abbreviation for registered government auditor.
Again, because I wear many hats, I know that's a serious subject of discussion in the Justice and Portfolio and Corrections Portfolio Committee on all Chapter 9, which includes that one. So I think when that process is done, it might answer our questions. And I'm sure the AG is also going to be participating in that one at that level. But what we are saying, AG, is that maybe it's something that we must consider, not just you, but everybody else, the overlapping mandates, because it talks to the affordability and the stitching of resources. So, is there anything that you would want to answer immediately?
For fear of having misconstrued my comments again, Chair, I'd better say no. Just the aspect of the IGR, cross-departmental discussion on how to wrap this hand over as well, because it's a fairly comprehensive kind of subject. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. I'll allow you, AG, to give your concluding remarks. Let me just indicate, members, that and you'll tell me if I'm summarizing it accurately. I think there's a clear message that has been sent to this table that there will be a need for a more comprehensive interaction, longer than the normal 1 hour, so we're looking at a two-day type of breakaway. The program, as I understand it, and this is changes between now and when we come back, is that we come back from recess on the 13th of October, I think, and the first 2 weeks are meant to be committee weeks. So we could steal 2 days from those committee weeks, but what it would really mean is that then we're not going to be serving in other committees. And members must be clear on that one. We can have a two-day breakaway, but it means that we'll have to put apologies in the other committee. And we then can negotiate with AG and his staff which 2 days serve us in that two-week period. And we'll go off-site and go and sit somewhere for 2 days and deal with it. And on that day, there's these 5 things that have become clear. AG, we're sharing it with you before so that we all are in the same thing. like our program is going to look roughly as follows. Your threat plan, input and discussion. Your budget, input and discussion. The audit committee, input and discussion, because they've got a specific role to play and they want to come and share it with us. The audit committee, what is it that they do and what role do we play? Because part of their recommendations in terms of external auditors, we must interact with it. And then as an in-house discussion, all of us, even if it's not adopted there, it'll be adopted somewhere else, is really looking at the review of the PAA, specifically the funding model. And one thing that you didn't bring up, members, let me bring it to your attention, is the whole issue of the remuneration policy. Now, let me explain to you. The Auditor General, there is no hard and fast rule that says how much he must be paid or what his increase and so on. It has created a problem in the market. Just to whisper to you that Terence, for his 5 or 7 years, I think he didn't get an increase because he was too shy to say, no, no, but guys, you guys must talk about my increase. And I said, no, leave it. I'm the Auditor General, I must not be seen to be greedy. That will gain problems going forward. And because there was no clarity on it. So it must be part of our review. Yeah. It must be very clear that, no, the Auditor General, when it comes to his salary increase, it must be done by who or who or who. I think that must be made very clear. I mean, judges is clear, MPs are clear, everybody else is clear. So it must be clear with them as well. I mean, they were too shy to raise it. So it's those type of things that in the run-up to these things, we will send you reminders that when you go and think and go and lobby to your own party caucuses, these are the type of things that we must address because these will have far-reaching implications. Does Parliament pay them? Not Parliament, but doesn't they get paid directly from the fiscus? Is a political decision. Who and when does the AG's salary get reviewed? There's a remuneration committee for DAG and everybody else. There's a committee that the AG puts together. How much should I pay my staff? But there's nobody that says how much he must get paid. So we'll raise those type of things so that you go and lobby your political parties. At the end of the day, I'm saying it again. Decisions are going to be our decisions that we will have to defend against every attack in South Africa. It can't be that DA is going to be saying, no, it was the majority party decision or us saying it was the DA's. Once we agree, when we come out of our apartment, we are going to live or die by those decisions. All of us as a committee. That's what I'm saying. We will highlight them, go and get some sort of indication from the various structures that you operate in, and come and convince us one way or the other, whether you're the ANC, whether you're the GA, because these really have far-reaching implications. Are we deserving somebody's mandate when we say, this is who must decide on the AG salary? Are we deserving somebody's mandate when we say, no, AG, it's not going to help you to get money from local government in Joburg because they don't have money. Let this money come from the fiscus. These are serious political questions that we have to take decisions on. So we will bring this into your attention a few days before we go, for you to go and lobby and get with them. So that when we take our decisions also, we don't come back as if we've got the power to make it, but we'll have the benefit of the wisdom of those that are in other positions. But we will bring that to you. And we will try and set aside Mr. Rambrock a two-day breakaway during that committee period. And all of them must participate.
Engagement from day one when you were installed as members of parliament.
And we are really very grateful that we now have closed that loop, and we are definitely going to do what we think is necessary to carry out the work that we have to do. And we take a note of your comments, Chair, that you made, where you said that we can't come here and give you documents the day before and hope that you have digested the issues. So we shall keep the promise to make sure that we make the necessary preparations whenever we come to interact with the office over the next 5 years. The work that we do in the office, Chair, as all members will appreciate, is not always smooth sailing. There are times when you need to confer and ask certain questions, for example, and engage with the community organizers, because as we do this work, as the members will appreciate, it's got a tendency to bring up things that do not normally get reported in a normal report. You know, if I get given a free hand to report on things that I do, normally I'll report that, yes, I did go to that meeting, and that meeting said, and then we got a report on it and all that. But here we deal with issues where some people do not necessarily always take kindly to the outcomes and the findings that we make. So it's always important that we have that engagement with the comics so that we can share with them where it relates to their mandate to protect and to help the office to do its work, so that we can make sure that we don't lose sight of that element as well as we develop our program of interaction. Secondly, the other two reports which are important, which normally come through the public domain via the general report process, is the BFMA general report and the MFMA general report. I am sure members pick it up through other county work they do or in the public domain, what we come up in the public domain. And what we would also like to add to this is that we probably also have to have a slot where prior to or during the time that we're going through the roadshow, our audit outcomes, either for BFMA or MFMA, to share them with the committee, even though the committee does not have a specific responsibility to activate that particular MFMA. But if the committee is aware of the issue that we are dealing with in the report and the type of support that the committee can provide in that context would also be good, because it's not just about how we run our activities, but it's also about how we carry out our mandate and how we perceive in the public domain on the matters that we are driving. Because I guess there's a perception that we do not align either, for example, or we do not deal with issues in accordance with the standards that the committee would have familiarize themselves with. It might be something the committee may want to engage with us on, particularly when it comes to MFMA and PFMA and all that, so that we can close that loop as well, instead of just being focused on how we carry out the work, but also what implications does what we are doing have in the context of the overhead responsibility of the committee. And I'm sure we can find a way to, so that, because in our struggle and in our annual report, we're probably going to be doing at high level with the likes of data of audit outcomes. But when we present to you the analysis of the BFMA and the MFMA, we will be dealing with the nuts and bolts of what comes out of the engine room, if you like. So I think it's one of the issues that we might need to think of how we can bring to the committee. We've done it before in with the previous committee, where I shared with them, and they were aware of what they're doing, so that when they interact on our behalf in various committees or the system of that context of the work that we deliver. On that note, Chair, thank you very much. We are looking forward to the engagement that we are going to have soon after this and subsequently other engagements. And I'm sure at that time we'll also invite the rest of our leadership team so that you can also be able to see them. I think it will be important for them to know committee, because whatever we do in the different portfolios, ultimately we end up in this oversight mechanism. So on that note, thank you very much, Chair, and we really appreciate the engagement and look forward to the future ones.
Meeting is formally closed. Have a good weekend. Thank you.
I'm going to do that right now. I'm going to do that right now. Yeah.